I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
And this is Murder, She Spoke. Emma, what is your chat for me this week? What have you been up to?
I don't know if I have a huge amount of chat, actually. We've just been watching some more bits and pieces. We watched the rest of Dez, the Dennis Nielsen doc drama that was on, and that was really, really good. But then we also watched something that we put onto, and it is fictional, but it was really good. It's called Cold Call.
Right.
And it's essentially about this woman who is cold called by a fraudster and loses all her money and goes on a mission to get it back. Ooh. And it's quite good. It's an actress that she's been in so many things. I think she's been in, like, I don't know if EastEnders or Corrie, it's one of the two. I don't really watch soaps, but she's been in lots of different bits and pieces. And you watch her transform from kind of a, you know, she's a carer, she's like a really nice, sweet, loving person. She's got her mum and her daughter who's pregnant. And then she does some really quite dark things to get her money back because this guy's completely ruined her future. And yeah, it was really good. We watched it all. So it does actually feature things that happen in real life cons. So people might be interested in it.
Yeah. What channel is that on?
So it's on Channel 5, and it's Sally Lindsay who is the main character.
Mm.
And it's really, really good. So yeah, recommend that, definitely. How about you? Tell me what you've been up to.
I just finished Dez yesterday.
Oh, did you?
Mm-hmm, yeah, because I watched it after you recommended it, and yeah, it's really good.
Mm.
David Tennant plays that part really well.
Scarily well.
Really, really well. Yeah, like, I didn't realise he was such a good actor, to be honest. And so, yeah, I finished watching that yesterday. I really enjoyed that. But then I picked up Little Boy Blue. So I've been watching that. And I think I've got the last episode of that to watch tonight, which is good. But I'm on a podcast hiatus at the moment because I have been listening to audiobooks. I've started listening to the Harry Potter audiobooks again.
Yay!
Because I'd started them ages ago. It's the ones that are narrated by Stephen Fry.
He's amazing. I love him.
Yeah, so I'd started them ages ago and never got very far with them for one reason or another. And I was going to read the books again. And I was like, do you know what? Actually, an audiobook would be nice because you can multitask when you listen to an audiobook. Do you know what I mean? You could just pop it on.
It's a bit like podcasts. You can just do other things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can go about and do what you need to do. So I've already finished Philosopher's Stone and Chamber of Secrets.
Oh, I love it.
So I'm going to be on to the Prisoner of Azkaban. But also, I found out that they have an audiobook, not narrated by Stephen Fry, but they also have an audiobook of The Cursed Child.
Oh, really? Yes. I didn't know that.
Yes, so I will listen to that as well. Even though I've seen the play twice, I'll definitely listen to that as well.
Yeah, I like Audible.
Yeah, because I'm a complete geek. And also, I ended up buying a 3D night bus puzzle.
I love it.
So Sean and I have been doing that.
Is it hard? Is it really hard? I've never done a 3D puzzle.
It's not easy, but it's not impossible, if you know what
okay.
I mean.
Yeah.
But
it's not dishearteningly difficult then.
Yeah, and like we saw it when we were in the place and it looked really cool. So I was like, yeah, let's get that. So yeah, so that's what I've been up to. We started a new series, but I'm not too sure what I think of it yet. It's on BBC iPlayer. It's Taboo with Tom Hardy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure what I think of it yet. We've watched two episodes so far, so yeah, I'll see if I'm going to continue with that.
I really like him as an actor, though, so I would be kind of sold on that premise.
Yeah, same. It's just an unusual kind of, like, I can't really tell where it's going or mm-hmm. what it's about yet, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm still making my mind up about that. The jury's still out on that one.
Hey, everyone. This is Prash, host of Prash's Murder Map. pack your passport and jump on a plane, because I'd like to take you on a journey to investigate some of the most heinous, macabre and enigmatic murders across the globe and throughout history. We'll look at forensics, psychology and more as we dissect solved and unsolved cases like Australia's Frankston killer and a murderous family on the American frontier. If you'd like to give my podcast a try, you can find me on all major podcast platforms and YouTube. Hope to see you soon.
I'm excited. What have you got for me this week?
Well, the case I've got for you this week, it might actually be a bit of a short one because it's from 1980.
Okay.
And I couldn't find a huge amount of information about it, to be honest. The information that I did find about it was more about the house where it occurred.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So I was surprised, actually, because, you know, I thought I would find a bit more, but you know, sometimes with these older cases, it can be hard if there's not been anything in the news about it recently.
Yeah.
For any reason, like, you know, if it was unsolved, like some of the cases we've covered, there'll be more recent articles and they'll recap the story.
You're kind of dealing with the old newspaper cuttings and things like that. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But because this one was solved and it was back in 1980, there hasn't been a huge amount about it. So might be a short one, but I'm looking forward to telling you about it anyway. It was a case that I hadn't heard of. It was recommended to me by someone I used to work with, who is actually from Dundee, which is where this takes place. This is the case of Henry Gallagher. Have you heard of it?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. Right. I will just jump in then.
I like that little look. You're like, yay. Good news.
Yeah, because, I mean, well, we've done a few high-profile ones recently, obviously. Yeah. I did Alistair Wilson and you did Mikhail Kular. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so we've done a few high-profile cases recently. It's hard not to know about those kind of cases when you're from Scotland. But it's good to, it's good when you find out one that you don't really know about.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so on the 18th of May 1980, four medical students were playing football when one accidentally knocked it over the fence at number 2 Rose Angle in Dundee. The student noticed after glancing through the window of the house that it was a horror scene. Henry Gallagher was aged 29 and was attempting to rob the house at number 2 Rose Angle. Gallagher had a previous history of burglary and violence, and had apparently killed a family's pet dog during one of his burglaries. When attempting to burglarise number 2 Rose Angle, he was caught in the basement by the owners, a retired general practitioner, Dr. Alexander Wood, who was 78 years old, and his wife, Dorothy. After being confronted and hit by Dr. Wood with his cane, and after hearing Mrs. Wood screeching for the police, Gallagher apparently lost control and hit the couple with anything he could lay his hands on. After slaughtering the couple, Gallagher apparently reassembled the couple by the window, with Dr. Wood being placed in a chair.
Oh.
Yeah.
And to make it look like there was people there.
Well, see, that's one of the things that I've struggle to clarify. That was actually a small detail, which I just...
That's not a small detail.
It's not a small detail, but for me to find that was actually, it was barely mentioned. I was lucky to spot it. I don't know if it's because of the age of the crime and, you know, how sort of like way back when there was a totally different culture. You know, it was like, I remember my mum telling me about when The Exorcist came out and she went to the cinema to see it. And I think she was 16 at the time. So that would have been early 70s. Mm-hmm. And she said nobody had ever seen anything like it ever. She couldn't sleep for a long time, like it was horrifying. Now we're a bit desensitized to this stuff, so I feel
we love like the drama, don't we? We like the nitty gritty and like the gory details.
Yeah, so I feel like a detail like that would be readily included in an article now, but at the time I reckon it is the type of thing that would have been held back on. So I think that's why. So literally the only detail that I could find out about it was that he reassembled the couple by the window. Now, I don't know if that was, like you say, to make it look like they were home and everything was normal, or what was going on there. If that was
there was
just
some psychology behind it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's as much as I know. So he took some items of jewellery and fled. Now, having said that, he did say that he knew he had spent at least a couple of hours in the house after he killed them. I don't know the details of what he was doing within a couple of hours, if it was just shock, if he was cleaning them up to reassemble them to try and make it look normal. I don't know. Total speculation.
Bizarre.
Yeah, so he the purpose of him breaking in was to burglarize them, so that's what he did. He stole some jewelry and I think some other items and he fled. Now, he accidentally boarded a train to London and he made his way to Brighton.
Yay!
That's where all the interesting folk come. And travelled around the south coast for a few days and sold the stuff that he'd stolen.
Oh, so he went on holiday. That's nice.
Yeah, we get all sorts down here. He then made his way to Ramsgate in Kent and sought refuge in St Ethelbert's Presbytery.
Okay. Right. Is that church?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So he was permitted entry by the housekeeper, Maud Lalaine, and met with a Benedictine monk named Edward Hull. Now, after meeting with them, I think they sat down and they chatted. And I don't know if this was prompted by the monk. It sounded like it might have been, but he basically confessed to what had happened in Dundee. Obviously, the housekeeper and the monk expressed probably horror at what he'd done. And Henry Gallagher ended up beating them both to death with the monk's walking stick.
Naturally.
Yeah. So obviously he knew that they
would chop him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They weren't going to protect him. So yeah, that's what it sounds like to me.
What was he actually expecting? They'd be like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Do you want some tea? Toast?
Well,
like,
you know
what was he actually expecting?
There is that thing, isn't there? It's like, you know, sort of refuge in the church. If you confess your sins and stuff, but I don't think
if you're a murderer, I don't think it works that way. If you're a murderer on the run, I don't really think that's how it works.
So 4 horrendous murders had occurred within 6 days of each other. 7 days later, he was caught and arrested by police after calling it a vicarage in York. Now, police attending the scene at Number 2 Rose Angle said the crime scene resembled an abattoir and the scene was so horrific that police struggled to deal with it. Dorothy had apparently been hacked and beaten to death with a slater's hammer. Now, Gallagher was captured, declared insane, and sent to Broadmoor Hospital indefinitely.
Mm.
And he's believed to still remain there to this day. Just a side note, I don't know what it was like back in 1980, but certainly now for someone to be declared insane, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
That's a hard task. I don't know if it was just much easier back then or if this guy, if there was more context to his, you know, or information about his background that I wasn't able to find when I was doing this research.
The fact that they said it was like an abattoir and the fact we know he spent hours in the first crime scene and he rearranged the bodies suggests that there's a level of depravity or something there that would lead them to that immediate conclusion.
Yeah, well, I mean, as I said earlier as well, like when he had burglarized a property.
Yeah, he killed a dog.
Yeah, he slit the dog's throat.
I would write anyone off.
I mean, I don't know if...
He was trying to silence it, I'm guessing.
Well, that's it. I don't know any more details about it. But on the one hand, you think, well, was the dog making a noise and that it might have alerted the owners that he killed it to silence it? Or was it just that he was a sick bastard?
And yeah.
He got some sort of depraved enjoyment out of this.
Just doesn't sound like he's got any control, like impulse control at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, as I said, he was declared insane and sent to Broadmoor Hospital indefinitely, and he's believed to still remain there to this day. I think journalists have tried to confirm that, but Broadmoor won't confirm that he's a patient there. But he's not a patient at, is it Ashworth?
Yeah, Ashworth Hospital in Liverpool.
So basically there's 3 in the UK, Ashworth, Broadmoor, and another one which I can't remember off the top of my head. So he's not a patient at either of the other 2 hospitals. Broadmoor wouldn't confirm. He's not incarcerated in a prison.
Okay.
And there's no death records for him. So they've basically...
And he's not been released either. They would have had to, yeah.
They've basically assumed that he's still a patient at Broadmoor.
Yeah.
not sure when this was discovered, but a short story was found in a bookshop in London by an author with the pen name Henry John Reed. It was published in 1994 and documented what had happened to the couple and the events leading up to it. The publishing house confirmed it had been written by Henry John Gallagher while a patient at Broadmoor Hospital. In the book, Henry disclosed that he was brought up by a single mother who'd been badly abused by Henry's father despite remaining in love with him, and he had actually been named Henry John Reed. So that was the name that he was born by.
Okay.
I'm not sure at which point that his name changed to Gallagher. The house at number 2 Roseangle was inhabited by students for a couple of years after the murders at some point, but has lain empty ever since. Plans were in place to convert the property to a restaurant, however it's fallen through and the house went up for sale again, I think just a couple of years ago. And basically it's referred to as the murder house. And
I mean, I'm sure there's someone out there that has an avid interest in true crime that would maybe want to live there, but apart from that, no one's going to want to live there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a Category C listed building, but there's like, I think obviously extensive, it's been empty for 40 years pretty much. So there's extensive work that needs to be done to it. Somebody has owned it for, I think, about 10 years or so, but they haven't made much progress with it because of people trespassing and graffitiing it and stuff. So there's quite a few articles about the house and it gives a bit of a description about the story. Yeah. But other than that, it was actually really hard to find any other information about it.
The short story that was published, can you find it online?
So the short story that was published, it was part of a...
like an anthology or something?
Yeah, it was part of a book of short stories called Blind Rage.
Oh, wow. Okay. That might be quite an interesting one to read.
It's like a 22-page story, basically.
Jeez.
But it was found in a bookshop. And that's how I think they came across a lot of the details for it. So that is the case of Henry Gallagher.
That is unbelievable.
It's quite surprising that we've never heard about it before, isn't it?
I know. There are so many angles to it that are really, really interesting. The fact that he was seeking refuge from and then attacking clergymen.
They think as well that apparently he assumed that Dr. Wood was, because he lived quite close to the house is quite close to the church.
Okay.
And he incorrectly assumed
that he was of religious background in some way.
Whereas he wasn't, he was a retired general practitioner.
Oh my goodness. Well, there's the motive if ever you needed one.
Yeah. Really heinous.
I think with people like that as well, the fact that he just took off and fled to the south of England doesn't really sound like he knew what he was actually doing or where he was going. He was just kind of aimlessly
drifting.
Yeah. It's quite sad.
It's a shame as well because he's never actually been tried for murder in Scotland. He was tried in England because he was here. He was in Kent.
Mm-hmm.
Or he was caught actually when he called it York, when he tried to call it a vicarage in York. But, you know, he was tried in England and, like I say, he was declared insane.
They must have just never pursued him for the first murders because he was already getting dealt with, more or less.
Basically.
Wow. So, I would love to know more about that. I wonder if there will ever be stuff that comes out.
Well, one thing I did find when I was doing the case research is there is a tour in Dundee and it includes that house.
Wow.
Yeah. So they might have a bit more background, but I also, when I was trying to look up some details, there was something that said, oh, just ask any kind of old man in a pub in Dundee and they'll have, and that's the thing. If you were there, there'd probably be loads of stories and information. People would know all about it and all the background and stuff. But in terms of what's actually reported on to find online was quite minimal.
That is insane.
Yeah. Pretty intense, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Well, if anyone is an old man from Dundee
that wants to get in touch and give us some more information about it, absolutely.
If there's anyone that knows something, we would like to know if there's any more info. I quite like ones like that where you've got to dig. I felt a bit like that with some of the cases that I've dealt with that are older as well. And, you know, you're trying to look at microfiche, essentially, for some of them.
That's it.
It's difficult, but I quite enjoy it. Quite enjoy digging and find. And then you're like, oh, there's a new article. Oh, no, it's the same article. Damn it.
Yeah.
It's so frustrating. But
yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I really like that one. It was really good.
There you go. So, do you have a true crime fact for us?
Yeah, I have a fun true crime.
All right.
That I really enjoy. So this is a Scottish true crime from the 5th of January 2015, but it actually happened in the early hours of New Year's Day in 2015.
Okay.
Also in Dundee. What are the odds?
It's all happening there. It's quite a big city, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Wait till you hear this. You'll love this.
Okay.
So there's a guy who goes out on New Year's Eve and he has a great time. He decided that the best way to pass his time in the early hours of New Year's Day was to bounce his way through a dual carriageway underpass, which had no pedestrian footpath, on a space hopper. So basically, these witnesses saw him. He nearly got ran over multiple times and he's bouncing along, having an absolute time of his life, because let's be fair, space hoppers are amazing. And the police were called. So he only eventually stopped because the police came and asked him politely, please stop space hoppering through like the city at 3 o'clock in the morning. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. And there was a witness who called Jamie Shankland, and he said it was completely surreal. It was like a scene from a movie. I only stopped my car because there was a police car blocking the lane and there was a commotion. And I pulled out past the police car and I noticed there was a big red balloon on the road. And it wasn't until I passed and saw the horns on the top that I noticed it was the space hopper.
There's a thing to hold on to.
And then he said, I can only assume that the gentleman, I love that he calls him that, I can only assume that the gentleman was space hoppering for some time because there's no path there. He's really thought about this. He's gone away, like, trying to put it together in his mind, like, yeah. That's quite a distance.
Let's look at the logic in this situation.
So ridiculous. Wait.
Did you see that was New Year's Day?
Yeah, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, I was going to say, you wouldn't really expect there to be much, if any, traffic on the roads at 3 a.m. on New Year's Day.
No, no. Apparently, he looked pretty drunk, apparently, which I'm not overly surprised at. Mm-hmm. The witness also said, you could tell from the sheepish look on his face that he knew he was doing something wrong, but he didn't know what it was. How could you not know? How could you be like, well, I don't really know what you're stopping me here for, like.
So did he get charged? Did he get in trouble or anything?
It just says that he was caught on the dual carriageway and they pulled him over. It doesn't actually say that he committed a crime. But he was also coming towards oncoming cars. Maybe it was the most ludicrous suicide attempt that you've ever had.
So didn't say he got in trouble or got charged or anything like that?
No. No.
Wow.
I know. There you go. We're just want to acquire a space hopper at 3 o'clock on New Year's Day.
He's probably stolen it from someone's garden.
Do you think he's got kids and he's like gone all the way home to get it? Like, going back out.
What a way to bounce into the new year, eh?
Oh, God. Do you think he bounced back after it? I can't even. I love it so much. It's the kind of thing that I really enjoy, that kind of crime, because it doesn't really harm anyone. Like, provides a lot of entertainment. It's usually drunk people that you know, provide this sort of entertainment for me. But I just get a kick out of it because, like, no one died, no one was really harmed, nothing.
Yeah,
really came
it's,
of it.
It's all
just
very
like
harmless.
low stakes crime.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, like people having fights with cooked or uncooked meat goods, that kind of thing. You know, like people lobbing stuff at each other that won't seriously harm them, but it might embarrass them, like throwing an egg at someone.
Yeah, I was gonna say an egg, definitely.
Yeah, that.
Do you know, I saw a thing recently on telly, and it was thinking about getting milkshaked.
Yeah, that's a politician thing now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I was like, I don't get it. I don't understand.
I mean, the only thing I can think about that is that milk stinks when it dries.
Yeah, it's just like sour, isn't it?
Disgusting. Yeah. And the other thing is milkshakes taste really good, so that is such a waste. Maybe if it's like a McDonald's milkshake or like, let's be fair, a Burger King milkshake, something like that, then yeah, I'd probably chuck that. Not like Yazoo or something. Mm-hmm. You know, and definitely not, we've got a place called Down the Hatch near us and they make milkshake with real ice creams. and they crumble baked goods on top of it, and they are
amazing.
Yeah, they're amazing, but they're also like your full daily calorie intake and a drink, and you genuinely feel like you could conquer the world afterwards because you're just like
high on the sugar,
buzzing with sugar.
I've never really been into milkshakes, but do you have crepe affair there? No.
No.
Right. So there's
what the hell are you talking about? I'm guessing it's a crepe place.
Yeah, there's a place called Crepe Affair, and they do crepes, obviously. And
spoiler alert,
they also sell milkshakes, but they're really bloody good milkshakes. Mm-hmm. So occasionally I'll get a milkshake from there, and that's the end of my story.
So you go to Crepe Affair and you're like, oh no, none of your crepes for me. Thank you.
With my crepe, or after my crepe.
You could roll the crepe up and use it as straw.
Well, you do get the crepes like strawberries and cream, so that would probably have been really nice with a milkshake.
Oh my god, yes.
Yeah. But yeah, so.
I'm living in the future here, people. This is how you need to train your brain.
If I ever got a milkshake, you know, just because I was in the mood for one, I really can't imagine wasting it on anyone.
No.
You know, but then I don't even like to share food, so.
No, same.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine wasting that and throwing it over somebody, especially if it cost me like £4 or something.
There's very limited foods that I would sacrifice to throw at someone.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't even sacrifice an egg, if I'm honest.
Raw, like, singular grains of rice.
Out of date foods.
Yeah. Or food that you bought when you were feeling really healthy.
And you find it forever, and you're just like, what was I thinking?
I know. I bought those zoodles, or like, no, the zero noodles, and they're made of
air,
sadness. When you eat them, you just feel all your dreams evaporate. Mm. Yeah, I've had them. They also smell like fish, which is not great. That's probably how you lose weight on that kind of thing.
Yeah,
because you're like, I can't stomach eating this. It's so disgusting.
So I'm just not going to eat.
Yeah, and it's put me off regular food for at least a day because I can still taste it and I've not eaten it for 3 hours. Yeah, I definitely throw them at them. Anything recommended by that Gillian McKeith?
Oh, God, yeah. poo in a Tupperware. I mean,
she was a weirdo, by the way.
Oh, no. Honestly. Poo in a Tupperware and let me analyse it.
What was that all about? Do you think that was just a fetish?
I don't know. I don't know if that was like a shock factor or what. She always wanted to be like, oh my god, it stinks. Like,
but she got really into it.
Yeah. For anyone listening who doesn't know, Gillian McKeith is the Scottish... She's just a nutritionist?
She's not actually a doctor. She calls herself Dr. Gillian McKeith. She's not a doctor.
Is she just a nutritionist?
I don't even know if she's qualified as a nutritionist.
Well, anyway, she's at this program. She's like mega healthy. She looks like death.
She looks
and
awful.
On this program where she basically was like, rather than going on a night out with your friends and drinking alcohol, get them to all meet and you can all drink like fruit juice together and you can still have a dance while you're sober and drink your fruit juice. And it was just the most pathetic thing I've ever seen. Uh-huh. But she'd make people poo in a Tupperware box and then she would analyze it. She would open the Tupperware.
She would just smell it. Basically. Yeah. I think that was her analyzing.
Yeah, and be like, oh my God, it smells terrible because your diet's awful and there's undigested food in here. And you're like, oh my god, like you could probably be like the healthiest person ever and I'm pretty sure your shit would still stink.
You know what, like, I would end up being the one to like go on that show, forget I'd signed up for it, go out on a night out and like drunkenly eat at McDonald's on the way home. She would like open it and nearly pass out. Absolute worst.
Thanks guys for listening. If you want to get in touch, you can contact us. Our email address is info@murdershespoke.net. We're also on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. And if you want to leave us a 5-star rating or a review, that would be very much appreciated. We also hope you enjoyed our recent special bonus episode with Mary Turner Thompson. We have potentially got ideas for future bonus episodes. If there's anything in particular that you'd like us to cover on a bonus episode, which is out with our normal kind of episode, then please also get in touch with your suggestions. We would love to hear from you. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.